Hello there. This is the Leaders Podcast for chapters 15 and 16 of Revelation. One of the things that I'm going to do now is encourage all groups to do the study after the sermon. This is for a couple of reasons. I think that although some people prefer to get a bit of an idea of where we're going before Sunday, overall, it seems that it's a better plan to hear the big picture on Sunday and then dive into the details during the week. This is particularly true for Revelation, and people have been finding this way much more helpful. And I think overall, it will be a better process to do. So sorry if you do the study before the sermon. I'm encouraging you to do it after. You're free to do it beforehand if you like. But this podcast won't come out until afterwards. So I hope that makes sense. Looking at chapters 15 and 16, which you should already have the studies with you. The first one is, what are your thoughts about hell? I'm going to encourage you to just discuss and disagree, but don't feel any sense of defensiveness about people's different ideas. Some will say there's no hell. Some will say hell is temporary. Some will say hell is here. All those sorts of things. Just allow the discussion to happen. I do think it would be helpful if there was the sense of shifting towards seeing hell as justice and judgment, and that what we have not been able to make right in the world, God will make right. Nothing will slip through the net, and those things that we've been frustrated about, where people have got away with murder, literally, they will not get away with. So hell is justice and judgment. Next question, who are those standing beside the sea in verses 2 to 5 and how are they described? Please realise that there is a strong, strong packing in of Exodus and the Exodus from Egypt themes. Those standing beside the sea, they were standing beside the sea in Exodus, and after the waves crashed back in and took out the Egyptian army. So here we have a group of people standing beside not just the Red Sea, but a glass glowing sea with fire. So this is an ultimate heavenly sea, and people standing beside the sea are those who had been victorious. This is how they're described, victorious over the beast, over its image, and over the number of its name. So they have maintained faithfulness. They have patiently endured. These people might be those that have already died as martyrs in the early church, or it might be a picture of all Christians in the future. I think either way it's okay. I tend to lean towards this being a picture of those who have already triumphed and made it through the other side, that they've patiently endured and paid with their lives. It's a bit like Hebrews chapter 11 with the Hall of Fame, the great cloud of witnesses that we're encouraged by, encouraged to keep going. So those are they, and they are described in that way. Next question, why do you think they are described as standing beside the sea? Well, I think the idea is they have crossed over. They are safe. They have been victorious. They are finally on the other side. And so they are an example to us of those who have gone before, if my understanding is correct, and ones that we are to emulate. Next question. Why do you think their song is described as of Moses? Well, technically it's described as of Moses and of the Lamb, but I think the part where it says God's servant Moses, it's really taking us back to Exodus 15. This is a new song that is an old song. This is the song of Moses, the song of rescue, the song of Exodus, the song of redemption. But it's the song of Moses and the Lamb. So it's a rescue in the Moses style, being on the other side of the Red Sea, safe from the Egyptians, but here safe from the beast and from the dragon. The next question is, what do you think is the why do you think the heavenly temple is described as the tabernacle of the covenant law? Well, what I think about this is that from heaven there is the lost ark, so to speak. It's not lost, it's there in heaven. And that is the place of the Word of God. It's the Word of God that's coming from this place. So it's the law of God. It's that which is going to judge all things, the pure law of God. And I think that the things coming from this place, the temple in heaven, that is the tabernacle, the covenant, the law, so it's coming from the pure judgment Word of God. Next question. Why do you think the angels' outfits are described? Well, my suggestion is that, you know, they're dressed in clean, shining linen and wore golden sashes around their chest, that sort of thing. There is the sense of purity, majesty, and priesthood. And so the judgment that they pour out is true and just. It is kingly, it is right, and it is to be understood as pure. It does go on in verse 8 there to say no one could enter the temple until the seven plagues of the seven angels were completed, which is really saying nothing can stop this. This is inevitable and cannot be stopped. Next question, compare trumpets 1 to 4 with bowls 1 to 4. What do you notice? Well, what you notice is that both 1 to 4 affect the land, the sea, the rivers, and the sky, the firmament, or the sun, anything like that, a cosmic thing. And so that's basically that. The next one, why do you think these events are occurring consecutively or concurrently? Why? Well, I think that both things are correct. The trumpets and the bowls are looking at the same events from different perspectives. However, there is also an escalation in the events so that the trumpets affect a third of all they impact. The bowls affect all of all they impact. So it could be the same events from different perspectives of different people experiencing those events, and it can also be an escalating events that are happening consecutively. So I hope that made some sense. I think they're concurrent but developing, a bit like a spiral staircase. You're going up and moving forward in a way, but you're also going over the same area that you've been. Next question. Why might we need to hear that the true and just of the true and just nature of these judgments? Well, I think that when we hear of this absolute judgment that's occurring, we need to remember that this is actually right. This is not unfair. This is appropriate. It's retributive. It's people getting what they deserve. And as horrible and as hard as it is actually exactly what we want. We want things to be right. What's significant about the river Euphrates drying up? This is the next question. So the river Euphrates was a natural buffer between Israel and the enemies to the east. And the Euphrates was the place, that a border of safety from them. If that dries up, then no longer is it safe. And this bowl being poured out upon the river Euphrates means that the wall, the buffer that was there, is no longer there. And so essentially this becomes a reverse Exodus event, where rather than the sea opening up, letting the Israelites through and then closing over the enemy, it now opens up for the enemy to come through. The next question, why do the kings of the earth gather for such a foolish battle against God? I mean, it really is, isn't it? Nobody would think that this is a good idea. Let's fight against God and see who wins. However, it seems that these three frogs in verses 13 and 14, think cane toad, not green tree frog, they come out of the mouth of the dragon and the beast, and the false prophet is the second beast from chapter 13. And so because it's coming from the mouth, it's the sense of false teaching, a false word coming forward and deceiving people. And so here the kings of the earth are deceived. But this is also reference to Psalm 2, which is really important to grab, because in Psalm 2, the kings of the earth gang up together and surround the Lord's anointed. Now, please read Psalm 2, because you'll find in Psalm 2 that God just laughs at it. He scoffs at it. His immediate scoff. There's no battle. There's just a laugh. And he says, no, I've installed my king on Mount Zion. Kiss the sun, lest you be destroyed in his wrath. So this really strong idea of a battle that begins but never it ends before it starts. Now, does verse 15 sound like an interruption to the story? Why do you think this may be? Well, it is actually an interruption to the story, because verse 13, 14, and then 16 flow perfectly. Verse 15 is an interruption. It's a surprise verse, and it's about a surprise. He says, look, I come like a thief. Blessed is the one who stays awake and remains clothed so as to not go naked and be shamefully exposed. And I think this is the only imperative, or it's the only call in this section of Revelation to the reader. So as I think what it's saying is that as we're reading this about the full final judgment of God, don't just think this is about someone else. This is motivation for you to make sure you stay awake and remain clothed and not go shamefully naked. So you'll notice that this is a direct reference to Sardis in the first seven churches. So if you have a read of Sardis, you'll find here that Jesus says exactly this, that he comes like a thief, they are to wake up. So here is a church that's fallen asleep in the midst of all of this going on, and they need to be people of mission, of kings and priests within their world. The next question, what is done in verse 18 and following. I'm still looking for it. Why can't I see it? It is there. I'm going to stop for a second. Sorry about that. I was looking at the wrong section. Verse 17, the seventh angel poured out his bowl into the air, and out of the temple came a loud voice from the throne saying, it is done. Now, where have you heard that sort of language before? It is done. Well, I want to suggest you've heard that language before at the cross. It is finished. I think that when we look at full judgment and understand the judgment of God, we've got to see that it's first and foremost poured out on Jesus. It is finished, the payment for judgment. However, for those that do not want Jesus or reject him, there is a legitimate judgment coming towards them, and this full judgment will be one day. It is done. In the end, who is the last question? Who is this message of judgment to? Well, I think this message of judgment is to believers. It's a reminder that God is bringing all things to their deserved end, and that we ought not live for the things anymore that God is going to bring to an end. What a pointless life to be rescued from the judgment, from idolatry, and yet to slip back into it as God's freed people. This is not saying you won't be saved if you fall away or something like that. What it is saying is you'll have lived a pointless, meaningless life, and there will be you will be called to account. We will be called to account for that. So there is chapter 15 and 16, and I hope that it is helpful for you. Please tell me if I can be any of more help in these things, particularly as we go through Revelation. And just a reminder that we do want to now do the studies after the sermon. So 15 and 16 preached on that week. Look at 15 and 16 in Bible studies. I think that'll be the best way to go, and that's the way we'll be providing the studies from now on. Thanks. See ya.